Welcome to Texas Crimecast by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Tristan Hallman. On our show this week, we'll speak with John Bergdorf. You may not know his name, but he's the guy behind DFW Scanner, which boasts over 368,000 Facebook followers and another nearly 100,000 Twitter followers. We'll also have something of a greatest hits collection for you already on our fourth episode. We'll talk today about the turmoil surrounding Chief David Brown, the Dallas police chief, Dallas County District Attorney Susan Hawk's decision to open up about her mental illness, and then we're going to speak about a break in the case of a dentist killed in her uptown parking garage. We'll also be joined later by editorial writer Mike Hashimoto. Joining me this week on Texas Crimecast is a relative veteran, Sarah Mervosh, our courts reporter.
Hey, Tristan.
Hey, Sarah. And making her Texas Crimecast debut this week is my police reporting partner, Naomi Martin.
Woot woot!
All right, well, let's get started. Sarah, you with Susan Hawk, why don't we talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so Susan Hawk decided to sit down with me and Meredith Lann of NBC5 this week. She had already spoken to D Magazine, but this interview was a little bit different. She did address her mental illness and her thoughts of suicide, which she suffered from this summer. But she also talked about her past prescription drug use and some other lingering questions about her diagnosis and her treatment. So let's hear her say it in her own words.
It was at the very end of July. And I had let things, my depression and my anxiety had gotten out of control. And I didn't even realize what it was. All I know that it had gotten to a place for me that I knew I didn't want to do this anymore. I knew I didn't want to be here anymore. I've thought enough about my job, and my job has always been such a big part of me that I wanted to do the right way for there. And so, I thought I'll resign, and then I'll kill myself.
That's an extraordinary thing to hear from a sitting district attorney. What was it like, sitting down with her after all these weeks and talking to her about stuff that you've written about and that she had stayed relatively quiet about and tried to kind of brush under the rug her and the people around her? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little surreal. I do cover the district attorney's office, and I had actually, I had written about her inauguration. I actually drove her to her inauguration to do a profile on her. So we had a relationship before some of this stuff started happening. But in her first months in office, she had some trouble. She fired some high-profile employees, which was very controversial. We broke a story that said that she had been in rehab during the campaign, and she acknowledged taking prescription drugs for a bad back. And then this summer, she disappeared from office. We didn't know where she was. They wouldn't say. They said she was on a summer break or taking time off, but they wouldn't say where she was. And it later came out that she was suffering from depression. And then weeks went by. We didn't know what that really meant. And then this week, we finally got to hear from her. And I do have to say that her demeanor and her it was different than what had been like before, and when I was dealing with her in these first few months in office. She was joking. She was making jokes about, putting the TV mic on, having to sort of shove it up her dress, and she was making fun of herself for being too tan in high school. And so she was more of the fiery, sort of fun, fiery prosecutor and judge that many people voted for. But she also, she's just recovered from this very serious incident where she thought about killing herself. And there was, she was in some ways a little bit still fragile. I think that's understandable.
Earlier this week, we also heard, after this, the news that she had, threatened to kill herself broke, the Dallas County Democratic Party asked for her resignation. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Democrats came out on Sunday saying that basically Susan Hawk needs to resign and focus on her health after D Magazine reported that Susan Hawk had threatened to kill herself before she booked into this psychiatric hospital in Houston. And then while she was there, she threatened to do it again. She was thinking about using like a blow dryer cord to strangle herself. Very, very chilling sort of these details that were jarring. And so they said, because she threatened to kill herself while in the facility, she was technically committed. She did not try to leave, but had she tried to leave, she would not have been able to leave. And so the Democrats felt like, her mental illness should not be belittled, and she should step back to focus on that. But I think they've actually backed off of that a little bit. I haven't heard them say anything else this week, but, in her interview, Judge Hawk said, if I thought I wasn't capable, I would resign, but I feel that I'm more than capable.
How do you think she got over something so serious like that? I mean, that's that's like the depths of despair, you know, trying to kill yourself. So how do you, within a few weeks, recover to the point where you can lead the county's most, you know, top law enforcement agency?
So she says that in Miniger, that's the clinic that she was at, she got medication adjustments. She went through 5 to 6 hours of therapy a day. I mean, she made leaps and bounds of progress, according to her. And mental health experts do say that when you treat depression, when you get the right medication, when you get help, it can be a pretty quick jump back, because once you've been adjusted, you can jump back and be okay. But it's still, that's a lingering question, because it was very severe and it was very serious. And as her political consultant admitted, it was life or death. She says that she's better, but I think a lot of people are just waiting to see how, you know, whether this is really something that she can be stable long term.
Well, Chief David Brown this week, the Dallas police chief, is coming off of a coup attempt. Naomi and I were reporting on this for most of the last 2 weeks or so. Naomi, why don't you go ahead and start? I mean, we've had a heck of a week. It seems like Chief Brown has kind of survived, has the support of the mayor and the city manager.
Yeah, I mean, he's in D.C. this week with the mayor talking about crime, and it just seems like, you know, there's going to be a support event for him on Friday with a bunch of, you know, the mayor's going to be there, State Senator Royce West, a bunch of other prominent pastors and politicians will be there. So it sort of seems like he might be, you know, not on the rocks so much anymore. But last week, it definitely was not a good time for him. I mean, you had national and local police groups calling for changes, and some even called for his resignation. So it's interesting to see what will happen.
Right. And we had a Sunday story sort of detailing some of the personal animosity, which is also professional as well. It mainly deals with professional. It seems like everyone on a personal level seems to actually, you know, like the guy. But the chief is, you know, members of his command staff, people who have worked for him, say that he's sometimes makes decisions in isolation. He himself has described himself in the past as a loner. You've covered a chief in New Orleans before who went through this sort of some turmoil, some issues.
Indeed.
How does that compare to this?
Well, in New Orleans, it was interesting because there were actually a lot of scandals like that made national news. You know, there were issues with rapes being undercounted, with crimes constantly being undercounted. There was a police shooting that the department just never told anyone about, and it sort of just was kept under wraps for a while. So you still didn't at that, you know, after those types of scandals, you still didn't have the level of volume around, you know, calling for the chief's resignation from police unions and from national groups. So that was interesting to see that it was like they were flying in these national group executives to come and say that Chief Brown needs to go, when Chief Brown, you know, he is not liked by a lot of his top staff, but he hasn't had a similar level of scandal here that you've seen other chiefs sort of weather.
Yeah, and sort of whatever issues that have come up, it seems like he's managed to slip out of them and kind of quash any sort of worries about his abilities as a chief. He's always looked very in command.
And so, you guys, it sounds like he may have done this again this time, but are there any other threats that could remain that might make this more serious in terms of him being ousted?
I think this is still looming. This, you know, it may die down for now. There may be, you know, a lot of events celebrating his tenure. Like we said, he has very good relationships with the community, and that's something that he's sort of excelled at. But, you know, I was talking to Jeff Halstead this week, who's the former Fort Worth police chief who lasted 6 years there, which is a long time for a big city police chief. Chief Brown is approaching that now. And he said that sort of
Chief
style,
Brown came in, was it in 2010?
Right. And yeah, he's been here since May of 2010. So next May, it'll be 6 years if he makes it that long, which, you know, kind of looks like it now. But he does sort of face the issue of, can he change his personal style? Halstead was talking about, you know, the need to cooperate with associations, the need to sort of discuss, to have a plan to go forward, and that kind of personal style doesn't work in today's policing. The Black Police Association, the president now, has expressed a lot of support for Chief Brown, but his term ends by the end of this year, and there's an election coming up, and the results of which could turn yet another association against him. It remains to be seen. This week we had a major break in a murder case that has gained international attention. Kendra Hatcher, the dentist, was killed a couple weeks ago in Uptown, but we did have a police announcement at the end of last week.
Tonight, we announce the arrest of Christopher Love, black male, 3/23 of 1984, the person we have identified as having shot Dr. Hatcher. He has been charged with capital murder and a federal charge of unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, and he is currently in the Dallas County Jail on $2.5 million bond.
So this was one of those cases that, and it feels good to also say the other person's name, Brenda Delgado. We had kind of kept it under wraps, even though it had gotten out anyway, just because she hadn't been officially named as a suspect
in
the case.
Now, Brenda, she was the ex-girlfriend of Dr. Hatcher's boyfriend. This is very confusing. Yeah. Love triangle stuff.
Please keep out your scorecards for this one. But, you know, it's obviously a very tragic case.
Obviously.
The ex-girlfriend of this guy allegedly asked for a guy and a woman to go rob Kendra Hatcher. It turned into a murder. We don't know if that was the actual intention or not. Naomi, you got a federal document this week that kind of detailed some of the stuff. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the FBI put out this affidavit that sort of described what happened. And basically, you know, we've always been wondering how did the ex-girlfriend get a hold of this alleged hitman? So this FBI document sort of talked about that. And basically, they met at let me back up a little bit. The ex-girlfriend met at an apartment complex, according to the FBI, with the getaway driver, who's a 23-year-old woman named Crystal Cortez. And there was another man there. And I guess, according to the FBI affidavit, Brenda asked the man if he knew anyone who could help her take care of something. And he said, yes, he could. And so that's kind of how this document suggests that they met. And so, you know, it also kind of goes into detail about how before the shooting, the getaway driver picked up the shooter at a location in Dallas, brought him, you know, he was hiding in the backseat so he wouldn't be caught on surveillance tape. And they go into the garage and she asks him, you know, she was being paid $500 is what she told the police to be the getaway driver. So she asks the guy in the back, hey, how much are you getting paid? And he tells her, none of your business. And so,
and he actually threatens her as her and her 6-year-old.
Yeah. So after the shooting, so she claims that she didn't know anyone was getting killed or shot. She claims she thought it was just going to be a robbery. But anyways, he gets out of the car. He goes and allegedly shoots the dentist. And then she, you know, the getaway driver says she hears one shot. And then he gets back in the car holding two purses. And as they're driving away, he says, if you tell anyone about this, you and your 6-year-old son are next. That's according to the FBI.
And the FBI is charging him because he does have a criminal record out of Tennessee, and he was carrying a gun. Like I said before, a very tragic case, and it's sort of one of those that you know, one of your worst nightmares is especially if you're still in the dating world, is encountering this level of you know, a love
revenge
triangle.
And jealousy.
And you know, I think it bears mentioning that a lot of people are wondering, you know, the police had the ex-girlfriend, who's Brenda Delgado, in custody at one point. She was answering their questions. Her parents went to the headquarters and answered questions, or at least her father did. And so it's just interesting that she's still on the run. They can't find her. And she's been wanted now for almost a week. They announced she was wanted on Friday. And a lot of questions are swirling about, you know, why didn't they have her under surveillance? Or if they did she get away even though she was under surveillance? So interesting.
And I guess at the time that they had her in custody, they didn't have enough evidence to arrest her. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, so one of my sources who, you know, has done homicide investigations said that basically the bar is extremely high to book someone on capital murder. It's so much easier to book someone on a minor charge, you know, just arrest someone for something minor. But with capital murder, you know, the bar is much higher. And then also you have to make consult with the DA's office. And so they just didn't feel they had enough to book her at the time.
You know, the other thing is but they did manage to find the shooter or the alleged shooter. And early on, it just seemed like that wasn't going to happen. It seemed like Crystal Cortez, the getaway driver, didn't know who this person was. So that is
right. And it's interesting actually how they caught him. It's surprisingly simple. you know, everyone has, it's so easy to get one of these throwaway phones now. And apparently he was still using the phone with the number that Crystal Cortez's phone had called. She claims Brenda called him from her phone. So she gave that number to the cops, and the cops tracked that number to him and found a vehicle that matched the description that the getaway driver had seen him get into. They were able to, you know, find him, surveil him, and they caught the gun, and police are saying they found the murder weapon, which is a pretty big break for police and prosecutors in a case like this.
Sarah, we hope to hear your coverage of this once, if and when it goes to trial. So
definitely.
Now joining us by phone from Arlington is John Bergdorf, the owner and creator of DFW Scanner. John, thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
John, you know, we've used you before here. I know I used you a lot, you know, DFW Scanner a lot when I was on what we call night cop, sort of night breaking news stuff.
We use you.
we just completely use you. So how did you get this started?
Yeah, well, it started actually about 5 years ago in 2010. I was a senior in high school then here in Arlington. And about 2 years prior, I had bought a police scanner. I had saved up some money from a summer job, and I had a friend down the street that had one and was always amazed. So I bought myself one, a little Radio Shack scanner, and was just instantly amazed at the information that came across the scanner waves, and quickly became known as the guy that always knew what was going on.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah, it is. That's right. My friends and family would text me and call me all times of the day saying, hey, you know, what's going on over here off, you know, I-20 or something, and I'd be able to tell them, well, it's, you know, it's an accident that's closed the freeway. So anyway, I was real intrigued with the information that came over the scanner radio. And so, you know, when I bought it, it was kind of when social media was on the rise and the popularity was really growing. And so I said, well, I'll start posting what I'm hearing on my scanner to my personal Facebook profile. And it was an instant hit. And so I said, well, you know, people are loving this. You know, my friends and family are big fans. So why don't I branch out and just go ahead and start a Facebook page for it? So my friends and family can follow along instead of calling me at 2 a.m. wondering what was going on. But anyway, October 2010, I started DFW Scanner on Facebook. A few months later, we started on Twitter, just kind of a way for my friends and family to stay informed.
John, did you ever have any idea that it would grow as big as it has?
Oh, absolutely not.
How many followers do you have now?
You know, intended it for my friends and family, which is probably 100, 200 people or so. And very quickly, I realized that the demand for the information was certainly something that was needed. So it spread like wildfire, and here we are 5 years later. We have over 450,000 followers on all of our social media accounts.
Holy crap!
It's grown like wildfire. So
John, this is Sarah, and how, you know, tell me a little bit about what you post, what types of things you post on there, and then tell us about the comments and what people are asking. People seem really engaged. They'll say, you know, prayers to whatever's happening.
Yeah, well, we post newsworthy incidents and stuff that we call community emergencies, which is basically stuff like house fires and police chases, and a lot of the stuff you see on the nightly news we'll post because a lot of the information comes over the scanner radios fairly quickly. So that's the type of information we post, pretty much anything related to public safety, fire, police, and EMS. And yes, we do get a lot of comments on our social media. Obviously, with the following of, you know, 450,000, you get a lot of comments and a lot of engagement. And so that's really why we've been able to see so much success on social media, is because you know, this information is for everybody. It's for the community, and we encourage people to engage with us and just overall just stay informed.
I'm curious, like, about you. Do you have a job, or do you do this as a job? Like, how do you have time to do all this?
I graduated from Texas A&M last May. Whoop! I am in the process of getting a job. I'm pretty close to a few, so I am looking to get a job. So
you were doing this while you were in college?
Yes, I started it when I was a senior in high school, and then continued it through college down at College Station.
How did you? What was your average day looking like? You know, balancing this with school.
Yeah, well, you know, when I first started it, I had the scanners on just about 24/7. You know, because so much happens in the Metroplex on a daily basis that it takes a lot to keep up. But you know, as we grew, as our follower count grew, we started to receive a lot of tips from the public. You know, they say somebody was caught in traffic, and they'd send me a text or an email or something saying, "Hey, I'm caught in traffic," and I'll be able to look up on my computer and post what's going on. And we've also been able to form several relationships with public safety departments here across the Metroplex, which has really helped with getting the information out. And really, these days, I don't have to listen to scanners as much, because I would say it's about 50-50. About 50% of our information comes from public safety departments themselves, them sending us information, as well as you know, citizens in the community, and then about 50% comes from our team of people across the Metroplex that listen to scanners and post straight to social media.
So, John, one more question for you. What is the future of DFW Scanner? You're obviously looking for a job. I imagine that's going to eat into some of your time.
Yeah, you know, we're going to keep it going. We've got a team of about 11 people across the Metroplex from all walks of life. And so, you know, as I do move into employment, I'm actually looking into the news industry. So I hope to kind of leverage my work at DFW Scanner into full-time employment, and definitely keep DFW Scanner going.
We have to advise you against that, but...
hasn't anyone told you there's no jobs in journalism?
Oh. Well, I'm actually talking with two news stations right now that seem pretty interested, so I'm excited.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and best of luck to you.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Good luck to you. We're just kidding. News is awesome. You should totally go into it.
This week, we're going to close with something different. Mike Hashimoto, an editorial writer here at the Dallas Morning News, has called in and will give us a good minute of commentary, and we're excited to have him on. But before we go to Mike, I want to once again thank John Bergdorf from DFW Scanner. Join us next week. Our show comes out every Thursday. We are on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe to our channel. You can tweet us at Texas Crimecast. That's at Texas Crimecast. And remember to find more of all of our stories today and continuing coverage on DallasNews.com. Our producer and engineer today is Brian Elledge. For Naomi Martin and Sarah Mervosh, I'm Tristan Hallman. Now here is Hashing It Out with Mike Hashimoto.
A large police story in recent months has been conflict. Citizens fear the cops. Cops are attacked by citizens. The gap is destructive. People of goodwill on both sides have reached out to close it. And then there's Carolyn King Arnold. She hasn't been a Dallas City Council member very long, and maybe she just doesn't get that whole chain of command thing when it doesn't include her. Still, a city council member calling the police on the police? Sadly, yes. Ms. Arnold heard from a neighborhood busybody complaining about a Dallas police officer and called the cops. Was this officer selling drugs to school kids or robbing a convenience store, maybe torturing a suspect? No, this cop, and I can't believe I'm saying this, had the gall to stop to help a 90-year-old guy struggling to trim the trees in his front yard. Think of it as a compassionate pause from chasing bad guys to help an elderly fellow who really needed it. You know, we really can't have that, right? So a pox on the neighbor who ratted out that cop to a city council member, and a double pox on Ms. Arnold, who clearly doesn't get what it means to protect and serve.